The gospel lesson for today comes from the gospel according to St. Mark. On that day when evening had come, Jesus said to the disciples, "Let us go across to the other side of the lake." And leaving the crowd behind, they took him with them in the boat, just as he was. And other boats were with him. A great windstorm arose, and the waves beat into the boat, so that the boat was already being swamped. But he was in the stern, asleep on the cushion. And they woke him up and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" He woke up and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Peace, be still." Then the wind ceased, and there was a dead calm. He said to them, "Why are you afraid? Have you still no faith?" And they were filled with great awe and said to one another, "Who then is this, that even the wind and the sea obey him?" So just about everybody knows the story of David and Goliath, right? I mean, if we took a show of hands, most of us would have learned the story in Sunday school. It is the classic tale of an underdog facing overwhelming odds as David, the cute little shepherd boy to whom we were introduced last week, takes on an experienced warrior twice his size and brings that giant to his knees with one well-placed rock. Frankly, the story isn't that much more complicated than that, so it always makes it into the list of those stories that we see fit to include in children's Bibles, right alongside the story of Noah's Ark and Daniel in the lion's den. Neither of which makes for appropriate children's stories if you bother with things like the details. Of course, lots of children's stories aren't actually suitable for children when you think about it. Hansel and Gretel comes to mind. I mean, who tells stories to children about a witch who eats children? It's just that we glide over the details in order to get to the happily ever after, in order to make these stories safe for general consumption. Well, David and Goliath gets the same whitewash treatment. It's a story that is made for TV with its good versus evil plot, its major characters straight out of central casting, and a moral of the story that is so simple, well, even a child can get it. But friends, what if most of what we think we know about the David and Goliath story is completely wrong? What if these erstwhile opponents are actually much more evenly matched than we have been led to believe? That, at least, is the thesis of the author and writer Malcolm Gladwell, who has written and lectured extensively on the story. Now, David is traditionally presumed to be an underdog because he is a slight youth facing a massive adult. He is an innocent shepherd boy taking on an experienced warrior. He, David, is armed with a mere sling against Goliath's arsenal of weapons. And so, at least on paper, this isn't a fair fight. David faces impossible odds. But in Gladwell's analysis, here's why David isn't really an underdog at all, but rather a cleverly matched opponent for the Philistine champion. First, David isn't armed with a mere slingshot, a child's toy. He is instead armed with a deadly weapon. You see, David carries a sling, which is a small pouch attached to two long cords or leather straps. When a trained slinger would load a projectile into that leather pouch and begin to whirl it around, even with one rotation, he could send a stone flying more than 60 miles an hour at a distance of up to 400 meters and hit his target square on. Second, the smooth stones that David picks up from the wadi aren't harmless skipping stones. Those stones are made of barium sulfate, which is twice the density of a normal stone. When you put a barium sulfate stone in a sling and begin to whirl it, it's a bit like loading a .45, and it has much the same effect. Now, a slung stone wouldn't necessarily penetrate the body, especially one protected as Goliath's was with armor, but it didn't have to. One well-placed rock could cause fatal internal injuries. Third, Goliath is armed to the hilt with the latest military technology, but he's prepared to fight the wrong battle. All of the giant's weapons, both offensive and defensive, indicate that he, Goliath, is a heavy artillery fighter, literally heavy artillery. All of that equipment probably weighed about 100 pounds. As such, it appears that he expected to be engaged in hand-to-hand combat with another heavy artillery fighter, and that's how Saul expected to respond to the Philistine threat. It's why he wanted David to put on his own armor. But David comes to Goliath not as a heavy artillery fighter, but as light infantry instead. So David may not be the underdog that we've always thought. Moreover, as Gladwell says, Goliath is not what he seems to be either. On the one hand, he is a menacing foe. He stands probably 6'9" tall in an age when most men were a foot to a foot and a half shorter. Goliath is armed with a javelin, a spear, a sword. He is protected by a coat of armor or mail and a helmet. He had developed a reputation for killing people effortlessly. But here's what's strange. Goliath has to be led onto the field of battle, almost taken by the hand by his shield bearer. As he goes, he moves really slowly, almost awkwardly, and he doesn't seem to react when it's clear that David isn't going to fight him the way Goliath has expected. It seems like Goliath is, in fact, oblivious to everything that is going on. Now, all of these anomalies have led scientists and scholars to speculate that something must have been wrong with Goliath. One clue is Goliath's immense height, which might have been caused by a benign tumor growing on his pituitary gland. If that's the case, then that tumor would have caused the pituitary gland to produce excess human growth hormone. The other thing that tumor growing on the gland would do is to compress the optic nerves, limiting and distorting Goliath's vision. That would probably explain why Goliath moved so slowly and so awkwardly, why he needed help, why he doesn't react appropriately to David's approach. Quite literally, Goliath never sees it coming, never sees what hits him. Now, to look at him, especially from the point of view of those Israelites standing on the front lines of battle, Goliath seems like a fearsome warrior that no one wanted to take on. And met on his own terms, Goliath undoubtedly was a fearsome warrior. But as is often true, the source of Goliath's apparent strength was also the source of his greatest weakness. Malcolm Gladwell says that giants are seldom so strong and so powerful as they seem. And sometimes the shepherd boy has a sling in his pocket. My friends, that is an important word, an encouraging word, an empowering word for you and me as followers of Jesus, who is himself the son of David. The fact that giants are not as strong and as powerful as they seem should encourage and empower us, because recent events have reminded us that giants still stalk our land. One giant in particular stalks our land, and that giant's name is racism. For centuries now, racism has thrown out his menacing taunts, denigrating blacks as niggers. And those who recognize the humanity of black people and argue for their rights and their full inclusion in American society as nigger lovers. Those taunts have frozen many otherwise well-meaning people in place, leaving them unwilling or unable to confront the giant face to face. Others have stood amazed, marveling at racism's weapons: the sword of slavery, the spear of segregation, the javelin of degrading and dehumanizing cultural practices and patterns, all until recently protected by the armor of the law. When civil rights protesters would dare to approach the front line, racism would wield his billy club and his water cannons and his police dogs, and the forces of right would be beaten back to their position. On Wednesday night, brother and sister Christians gathered in the sanctuary of Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church in downtown Charleston. Mother Emmanuel, the oldest church of its kind in the South, was founded by black Americans seeking to escape racism's fierce feints. That church was burned to the ground for its connection with a thwarted slave revolt. For years, its worship meetings were conducted in secret to evade laws that banned all black services. The church was jolted by an earthquake in 1886. Civil rights luminaries spoke from its pulpit and led marches from its steps. For nearly 200 years, Emmanuel AME Church has been the site of struggle and resistance and change. And on this past Wednesday night, Mother Emmanuel was a crime scene. 9 people, including its pastor, lay dead. They had been shot by a young white man who hated black people, accusing them, in his words, of raping our women and taking over our country. He posted other hate-filled words and pictures online. Now, some people have said that there was something wrong with the suspect, Dylan Roof, that he was mentally ill. Some people said there was something wrong with Goliath, that he had a tumor, and that may be true. David knew that there was something wrong with Goliath, but that something wasn't physical, that something wasn't mental, that something was spiritual. Goliath and his cause defied the God of Israel, who does not save by sword and spear, but rather works by love. My brothers and sisters, I would say to you this morning that racism is a spiritual problem. It is caused by an inability to see, an inability to see and to believe that all people, white, black, brown, red, yellow, and combinations thereof, are made in the image of God. All people are thus children of God. They bear God's image. They breathe God's Spirit and as such are entitled to the dignity of being called and recognized as children of God, children of the Creator and King of the universe. All people have a right to gather in their places of worship for study and prayer without fear of violence. All people have a right to patronize shops and to swim in pools and to walk the streets without fear of being stopped and questioned. All people have a right not to fear for their lives simply because of the color of their skin, nor to fear those acting under the color of authority, whether that granted them by the government or simply endued to themselves. My brothers and sisters, racism is a giant. But giants are not as strong, neither are they as powerful as they seem. Racism is a fiction born of fear and hatred and misunderstanding. And out of those primal elements emerge violence, whether it is the slave owner's lash or the lynch mob's noose or the lone wolf's gun. Brothers and sisters, you and I stand today on battle lines. We watch and we listen to racism shout its defiant taunts even this week in the sanctuary of Almighty God. But giants are not as strong and as powerful as they or as we think, and sometimes the shepherd boy has a sling in his pocket. And so, my brothers and sisters, we are not the underdog in our fight against racism. Because, friends, you and I have been offered the whole armor of God. Let us stand firm, therefore, fastening the belt of truth around us. The truth that all people are made in the image of God, are precious in God's sight, and are endued with the dignity of children of God. Let us put on the breastplate of righteousness by which all hearts are guarded in justice and right actions toward our neighbor. As shoes for our feet, brothers and sisters, let us put on whatever will make us ready to proclaim the gospel of peace, challenging racist assumptions, rejecting racist jokes, eliminating racist language. Let us take up the shield of faith, which believes that God will act to make all things right. Let us put on the helmet of salvation, which covers all who believe in Jesus. Let us take up the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God for all the people of God. A word that promises release for those who have been held in bondage, healing for those who are wounded, justice for those who have been wronged. Finally, friends, let us shoot racism through with all the love we can imagine. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. reminded us that darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. And so let love be the smooth stone in our sling. Let love find its target and bring racism to its knees. For the Lord does not save by sword and by spear, but works by love. And the battle belongs to God.